back to NeuroQual, where we explore the use of qualitative methods in neurosurgery. It's lovely to have you all back with us today. I am Dr. Charlie Whiffin. I've been your host before, and today I'm delighted to be joined by Dr. Laura Hobbs, who is a general anaesthetist and a clinical research fellow with the NIHR Global Health Research Group on acquired brain and spine injuries. And she is currently embarking on a mixed methods PhD. And today we're going to talk about some of the qualitative components of that PhD. So welcome, Laura.
Thank you very much, Charlie.
Shall we start with just a bit of a brief introduction to yourself, a bit on your journey and your particular research question that you are going to answer through your PhD, please?
Fabulous. Thank you very much for having me today. So I am a consultant anaesthetist. So I've trained within the East of England in anaesthesia, and I do general anaesthesia. But I'm also just started this year on a PhD at the University of Cambridge, based in the Engineering Design Centre within the Department of Engineering, looking at health system design in low and middle income countries, and specifically focusing on acquired brain and spine injury. My particular interests are in the role of families and communities in the detection and escalation of patients who are deteriorating. Talking a little bit about my journey, really, I didn't train as a sort of academic doctor. I was very much clinical throughout my training, but over the last sort of 5 years, started to develop an interest that started in global health and then became more involved in global health research. And so that's how I ended up getting involved in this particular area of research.
Okay, that's lovely. Thank you. So what's your path? You said that you weren't kind of like an academic doctor. So what is your past experience research and specifically qualitative methods? Just talk us a little bit through that journey there.
So, yeah, although I never had a sort of academic post in my training, I have been involved in different aspects of research throughout my sort of career. So during my medical degree, I was at Cambridge, and so in my third year, I undertook a research project, and that was very much a sort of lab-based research project as part of my experimental psychology degree. So that gave me a good introduction to kind of lab-based, very practical research. But my first experience of qualitative research was, again, as a medical student on my elective in St Vincent and the Grenadines. So with another student, we undertook a project looking at public understanding of HIV and AIDS prevention and control. And between us, we interviewed more than about 150 people. And it was a fairly structured interview performer. And to be honest, we didn't really know that we were doing qualitative research. But it turns out, now I understand a lot more about it, we were. But that was really my first insight both into global health research, but also into qualitative methods and the sorts of information you can gather just from talking to people and trying to understand their points of view, their cultural, societal differences. And so that was really, really interesting, just sort of got me thinking about research. But as I said, I then sort of didn't have a sort of strict academic training. I went into anaesthetic training, and most of my research then was quite clinically based, so patient recruitment or data collection in clinical trials. But as I mentioned before, I sort of became increasingly interested in global health, and from that point I met a group of researchers who were working in Cambridge in the field of global health research, and the more I talked to them and the more I started to get involved in the things that were going on, I realised that it was a really fascinating area of research, and particularly the qualitative side. And so that really spurred me on to get involved. And from there, I decided that a PhD looking into this area would be absolutely incredible. So that's how I ended up where I am today.
So it was a bit fortuitous kind of ending up with the group then. So more kind of like based on your network and who you were, like you see, were you finding out about the different projects in the APSI group. I'm just kind of wondering how you ended up with this project at University of Cambridge, how that kind of came about.
Yeah, so it was definitely a sort of fortuitous meeting of some people who were involved in the research and just really getting involved in whatever way I could. So I began just undertaking small sort of side things with them. And then talking, the more I talked to people involved in this group, the more interested I got. And, you know, initially, because I wasn't an academic trainee, I had to sort of carve out a pathway to sort of get to that, which, so the traditional route in medicine would be having an academic fellowship or an academic training job. So I actually undertook a global health fellowship, which was not a research fellowship, but gave me the platform and the time to be able to start to develop these things more. And it was really through that that I then consolidated everything, and then was able to join the ABSI group in a more research capacity.
It's interesting that metaphor you use about carving out time for research. And I think there are roles where research is obviously much more unexpected and it's built into the role. But sometimes, or quite often actually, as clinicians, there is much more of that need to purposefully create an opportunity that wouldn't have normally have ended up on your, you know, in front of you, you know. Yeah. That's quite difficult sometimes, isn't it?
Definitely. And I think it's I think a lot of medics or clinicians are often put off by research because it seems like you need to be, you know, you need to have been doing it for a long time and you need to have written lots of papers, or you need to have really, you know, got those academic jobs in order to even start to enter that space. And I think that's not true, but you do then have to, you know, if you want to do meaningful research, then you do have to sort of work out how to do that. I think there's lots of opportunities to get involved in things like data collection or, you know, consenting patients for trials, which is really useful to dip your toe in and see, actually, is this something I want to take further? But you also need to sort of work to find research that you're interested in and passionate about, because I think that's the other thing, is doing research for the sake of research, and then there's doing research that you really want to do and you're passionate about. And that for me was, as I started talking to people involved in this group, I realised that this was something I really wanted to pursue and take further.
Great. So when did you know that it was going to have a kind of quality? You said you'd done this project before, but when did you know that this project that you're passionate about really was going to have this kind of strong qualitative arm to it? And did you have any initial kind of concerns about that, or did you just embrace that as a part of the methods that you're going to use?
I think initially I sort of had an understanding that it would probably be qualitative, but I'm not sure I entirely knew enough to know what that meant in terms of what qualitative research was. So initially I think I embraced it and was like, and then I sort of went through a period thinking, oh my goodness, I don't really know an awful lot about qualitative research. But the more that I read and thought about my project, it was a very logical, you know, it's entirely grounded in qualitative principles. And I think for me, my initial concerns really were unpicking my assumptions about what qualitative research is, what it entails. And a lot of that, I spoke to other people who'd done qualitative research, supervisor who is very much grounded in qualitative research. And I think also just considering, you know, thinking about the role of families and communities, it really does fit with a qualitative approach. And so it was a sort of one of those sort of double dip things where the first time I thought about it, I had no idea that what I didn't know. And then a bit of fear when I started to realise how much I didn't know. And then as you read more and understand more, thinking, actually, this is completely where this research should sit.
It's funny, isn't it, that superficially qualitative research looks quite straightforward and quite easy. Yeah. You just sit and have a chat with some people. Yeah. But actually, when you start to actually think about it as a systematic form of empirical inquiry, there's a whole, you know, complex, you know, and the field is so heterogeneous, isn't it? You know, the one person can be doing it one way and another person does it completely yeah. differently with a different set of rules. So what kind of challenges have you found already in designing this qualitative study, and how have you overcome it? And what do you see as some of the challenges maybe still to come?
So I definitely agree. Qualitative research does definitely feel like there is just so much. And I think one of the things I've noticed is that people use this term qualitative research in a way that they would never use quantitative research. So they'll say, I use qualitative methods. You'd never say that about, you wouldn't say I used quantitative methods. And so I think one of the challenges I found is trying to balance this need to understand and read with also this sort of understanding that part of the process of qualitative research is doing the research. And that is a sort of a process in itself. And I think that's something that took me a little while to get my head around, because if you look at numbers and data, you collect the data, you analyze them. With qualitative research, part of your role as a researcher is understanding how you have changed the data just by being there, just by asking the questions. And I think talking to other people has been really helpful here, just to direct you in the right place or to encourage you to have the confidence to say, you know, you've done a lot of reading, you'll never read everything. At some point, you have to just start developing your skills doing the research. And I think as a doctor, we sort of see ourselves as very good at interviewing people, and it's a completely different technique and a different set of skills. And I think that's also been a challenge, is my own assumptions of how I talk to people. And, you know, you take a history from a patient, that's sort of like an interview, but this is totally different. And I think it's challenging yourself to recognise that, because I am sure there's lots of qualitative researchers who maybe when they started hadn't spoken to as many people as I probably have in my career. But actually, it comes with a load of assumptions in your head about what you think you are as an interviewer. So that's been interesting just to try and unpick that. And I'm sure as I look back on my initial workshops or interviews, I'll think there's been a change in the way I run them, in the way I talk to people, and therefore a change in the data that I collect and analyse. So I think that's been quite a big challenge. The other thing is, because working in global health and working in low and middle income countries, there's an awful lot of different cultural, societal norms. There's different processes to go through. And so sometimes it can seem quite overwhelming. You've got, you know, you're a new qualitative researcher and you're dealing with a different cultural, societal process. And I think one of the things that's helped me with that is drawing on the experience of colleagues who've been there before, but also of colleagues working in those countries, and trying to understand and use that connection we have to help with that challenge that it can be sometimes.
It's really interesting. You're saying about the difference between like a clinician interview and a qualitative research interview. Could you just tell me, like, for people listening who may just assume that actually they're pretty much the same thing, you know, you're just talking to people, what from your experience so far do you feel are the main things that might be different between something that somebody's quite familiar with and has done, you know, quite often, and something which is this new thing, which is this qualitative interview, which has been the main difference?
I think as a clinician, you are fact finding, but you have an agenda. You are trying to use your sort of medical background to work out from the patient, be it find out what the medical problem is, or in my case, in anaesthesia, often get a picture of the patient in order to then make a plan to give an anaesthetic. And so your agenda is quite overt in a way. The patient coming to you knows you're a doctor and you are asking them questions, and at times you find out surprising information, but you're very much there's also a sort of a hierarchical role. You're the doctor, they're the patient, and often you try and break that down, but both parties sort of understand, I think, the process of why you're here and what the purpose is. With research, you do have an agenda. But actually, what I found with qualitative research is that what you want is the rich picture from the person you're interviewing. And that has to come with you sort of embracing the fact that that will come from them and not from you. And so you might guide them and you might try and unpick things that you're interested in. But your agenda has to be that actually, fundamentally, you want to hear their story, their version of events, their thoughts, and sort of leave what you thought you were looking for to one side. And so I think it's a very different technique. And I think in the workshop that I ran recently, what we found was just allowing people to talk and at times just go with the stories that they're telling you. And because that gives you such rich data that you just couldn't get if you focused on, you know, your main research question. And it's a very different technique, I would say. There are similarities. I think building a rapport with the people that you're interviewing and working with is the same. You need them to feel comfortable to be able to share their stories with you. But it is definitely a different technique that you can see the difference in someone who's done this for a long time and someone who's new at it.
It's funny moving from a position of experience to that novel, not novel, what's the right word, but that that kind of naive assumption of,
yeah,
you know, I know what I'm doing, and then all of a sudden you realize, oh, actually maybe I don't, maybe there's some improvements I can make here.
Yeah.
The other thing I wanted to ask you about from something you were just saying was about, it's interesting how in, you know, understanding in qualitative research, you were always affecting the data and how you tackle a research interview, for example, at the beginning of a project might be slightly different to how you decide to tackle it by the end, by the time you've grown in experience, you understand how you're influencing the data. And that's something very different in quantitative, that element of removing bias at all cost. You know, the data needs to stay consistent and reliably stable. And, you know, switching your mindset to understanding that you can never really do that when you are part of the process. I mean, you're nodding away. What you know, what are your kind of reflections on that?
I think it's so true, and you can see it. I mean, certainly in medicine, you'd see it as when I was a junior doctor and you'd go in and speak to a patient and they'd tell you one set of things and then you'd present that to the consultant and the consultant would come and ask the patient the same questions and get a completely different answer. And you'd be like, oh, I promise I asked those questions. And so I already had this inkling that, you know, people cannot be treated like sort of numbers on a spreadsheet, and that actually you could ask the same thing to the same person, but you'll get a different response depending on you as the interviewer, but also them as the participant. And with qualitative research, it just feels like that is just the spectrum of that has widened massively, and you have to embrace that every interaction you have with them will affect the data. And certainly listening back to transcripts has also helped me to see that. You can see when you think that you are being a passive facilitator, actually you've said quite a lot, or when, you know, and it's interesting to try and unpick how you, and, you know, especially working in countries abroad, you're very much an outsider. And so knowing that if you were to do the same thing with a local researcher, the data probably would be very different, but that's not necessarily a bad thing. It's just acknowledging that it's different. And I think that's been, for me, just trying to embrace this, that actually, yes, you affect the data, but that doesn't necessarily mean that's a bad thing.
Thank you for that. So just thinking a bit more about kind of, because we're kind of moving towards that, actually, there's this, you know, there's this kind of space, there's this grey, you know, blurring at the margins where we are affecting data, we're thinking about how we're part of the process, but we also want it to be the participant's voice that we hear. And part of that is influenced by our positionality, our use of theory, our use of philosophy, and understanding really the grounding in which this new knowledge is being created. So I just wondered, at the moment, I know you're only in your first year, but are there any kind of theories or philosophies or authors that, you know, anything that you're reading at the moment that's particularly grabbed your attention, you thought, this is really helping me understand who I am as a qualitative researcher or what I want to achieve through this qualitative research, and that might then help some others?
So I think it might sound a bit of a cliche. I think it will sound like a cliche, but I was directed to Brawn and Clark early on, and I think what I have found really helpful about some of their papers and books has been making something that at times feels like this huge, you know, social sciences, philosophy, things I've never studied before, and taking it into something that feels a bit more approachable. And I think that's taken out some of the fear, is having something that's a little bit more readable and readable in short chunks, and then directing you to different places to read things has meant that I feel slightly less intimidated by this vast amount of field of research that I didn't know a lot about. And as you say, there's a lot of philosophy, there's a lot of things in there that if you've never studied that, it can just feel like, I mean, in the beginning, I was literally writing words that I couldn't remember what they meant. And I was just having a little notebook and I just write it down because every time I looked it up, I think, oh gosh, there's just, and actually over time, the more you read things, you start to understand things and you don't have to keep looking it up. But I think Brawn and Clark for me was just a nice place to just think, okay, I can read this and I can go back to that chapter and then I can go and read more things. And I think that's particularly for, you know, people who have been clinicians or medics, where sort of quantitative theory has been taught quite a lot, discussed quite a lot. Qualitative data is really not taught that well. Certainly, I was never really taught much about it. Maybe it's a side bit, you know, in a presentation, maybe a whole slide on qualitative research, but everything else is on quant research. And so I think just having something that feels approachable to just keep going back to has been really helpful for me. And I think it's enabling me to then engage better with it because I don't feel quite so overwhelmed by the amount of reading there is to do.
And I think feeling overwhelmed by qualitative research, that's not unusual. You know, you hinted at a few things around language. So, you know, and you're quite often, it's interesting when qualitative researchers have tried to make the discipline more accessible to quantitative, we've ended up using language associated with quantitative to say, well, this is kind of like this thing that you're familiar with. But then in doing that, that's kind of changed the nature of that concept. And that's really difficult. But all of our, you know, a lot of the tools are based, like say, in social sciences. And quite often, if you read, you know, they're very advanced in terms of qualitative methods. But for the novice researcher, that lack of accessibility to the discipline and to the field of methods means that people have kind of closed that door. And if for listeners that are listening to this podcast, there is another podcast where we interview Victoria Clark and about that, you know, about reflexive thematic analysis. And it just, I think it's really important to make the methods accessible and to make the theory accessible so that there's kind of like a gateway to the more advanced concepts, you know, because everything we do is so different. And I was thinking about this recently on I was thinking about analytical techniques. And, you know, in quantitative research, there are, you know, there's the kind of bog standard quantitative techniques, and there's nothing wrong with them. There's, you know, there's all your descriptive analysis, there's, you know, some non-parametric tests, there's some parametric, you know, but you can see how, you know, the statistics get more advanced, and with the more advanced statistics you can control for confounding, you can do all sorts of, you know, covariance and all sorts of things. And it's the same really in qualitative research. There's some kind of bog standard techniques and there's nothing wrong with them, they just kind of show you descriptively kind of what's in the data, and that's fine. And then there's some more advanced analytical techniques, and you don't see the advanced techniques proliferate the literature, you know, as much as the, and it's just about starting that dialogue and not being so frightened by things. But it's important to be able to get hold of literature which makes it okay, and the Brown and Clark literature is really useful in doing that. And hopefully from that you can then build that confidence so you don't need your glossary of terms by the side of you every time you pick up a qualitative paper. So is there anything that you're particularly looking forward to in your qualitative study?
I think what I've enjoyed so much, and I'm really looking forward to doing more of, is the data collection, the interviews with people, workshops. I think it's fascinating. I think just hearing people's stories and trying to understand these sort of really rich pictures is such a exciting way to do research. I think it's just incredible the amount of data you can get, but also just hearing these people from so diverse backgrounds and getting to understand in some tiny way their stories, their lives, and then having the time and the space to then take that away and see what you can make with that data, to me just is really exciting. And that's the bit I'm most looking forward to, is sort of developing my skills as a researcher. And then hopefully I've been sort of trying to keep a diary of this process, and I'm hoping that, you know, it will then in 3 years time I'll be able to look back and see both the change in me as a researcher, but also probably in the type of research I'm doing, the data I collect. So I'm really excited about that bit.
And this is what's a shame about podcasts, because you can't see Laura at the moment, but when she's talking about data collection, her kind of eyes are a bit sparklier. You get a bit more, you know, animated, and then that's really lovely to see, because actually that is the exciting part, is spending time with people, you know. And I think it's interesting you reflect on your own how you're going to develop as a researcher. And qualitative research quite often puts us on a much more humble kind of position, and willingness to start from a point of, actually, I don't really know what's going on here. Let's go and find out, you know. And it's that process of revealing something that you didn't even know was going to be, you know, you don't know the destination when you set out, and that is really exciting. So what do you think, to take you on that journey over the next few years, what do you think is your biggest knowledge gap? And, you know, that could be people or strategies, resources. So what's that kind of thing you really need to address? And what do you think is going to help get you there?
So I think at the start of this process, it would have been easier to list the things I did know about what I was doing. However, I think there's that, as I've sort of started to read, I think probably for me, it's the depth of knowledge. So I think it's, at the moment, I don't feel I've quite got to that really deep understanding of the sort of qualitative methods and theory, because it's only been a few months. But I think that's where I really want to spend the next few months trying to sort of delve into, is get a bit more of the depth of understanding. I think I'm really fortunate to work with a great bunch of people, including you, Charlie, and my supervisor, Tom, and, you know, Tom Bashford, who's also done a podcast. I think for me, people are probably the most important resource to get me going on this journey, because I think you can do a lot of reading and you can spend, you know, a long time reading, but unless you talk to people that understand the processes or have experience in it, it's hard to put all of it into context and see, challenge some of the opinions you might have, or challenge some of the things that you think about your research. And I think that's where I really hope that having a collaborative approach to research can make a big difference, particularly as an early researcher, is using those people who do have that experience to guide you to where, you know, there'll always be knowledge gaps, and it's sort of that unconscious gaps that are the hardest, you know, you don't know what you don't know. And so people around you who can say, have you read this? And, oh, I've not even heard of that. And then suddenly you've got a whole new depth of knowledge about something. And certainly, you know, coming from a clinical background, just having the time to do a PhD and develop that understanding and the research skills is just invaluable, because suddenly I can say, right, I don't understand, or I don't know much about this area. I'm going to go and read about it and properly understand it. And I think that's really exciting.
Yeah, that's really good advice. So collaborating with others, you know, that you said you're excited about the opportunity about learning in depth about qualitative, and that's one of the things that I love most when I see like students arc in terms of their learning, when they start off with you know, what are the methods required, and it's just, you know, the interviews or the focus group or whatever, and then they start getting interested in methodology and theory and philosophy, and all of a sudden it opens a whole new kind of door to inquiry that you had, you know, and just embracing that, you know, for what you can learn. And you also said about the gift of PhDs time, and I think from my perspective, is enjoy that, you know, enjoy that real kind of immersion in your study, And embrace that full qual. Yeah. We haven't even talked about the quants bit that you're doing as part of your research. You can come back and talk to us about how all that worked out. But it's tough doing mixed methods. So wish you well. Do come back and talk to us at the end of your journey or towards the end of the journey and tell us a bit more about how it all worked out. Especially that joining of quants and qual would be really interesting talking to you about that. And the very best of luck. Thank you so much for talking to us today. That's been fantastic.
Thank you for having me. It's been a pleasure.